Normally, companies who operate illegally do so by carefully hiding their activities. This company made no such move to operate secretively. Of course, its easily seen work was so far from the rest of civilization, it was difficult for anyone to enforce them to pay their taxes. The story of that company and their response to paying those taxes is this edition of The American Countryside.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The fur trade of the late 1700s was largely a Canadian affair. However, Carl Koster explains why the Americans played a vital role in how that trade was conducted.
All the furs basically are coming from northwestern Canada, but the funny news is the quickest way to get from eastern Canada to western Canada is by walking on 8.5 miles of U.S. dirt called the Grand Portage.
Carl knows that strategic piece of land well, today's Grand Portage National Monument. This site was a mix of many nationalities, each with specific roles in the fur trade.
This is the history of an English fur company run by Scottish partners with French-Canadian laborers called the Voyageurs paddling and carrying things who are trading with the free and sovereign nations of natives throughout North America but were operating illegally on U.S. soil.
Threats of taxation by the Americans were enough for the Northwest Company to relocate its business.
They really shouldn't have been here, and that's what facilitates the last year is 1802. In 1803, the company will move just 35 miles north to what is Thunder Bay, Ontario today.
The move from Grand Portage to Thunder Bay was short in distance, but it created a much more difficult trade route.
Even just 35, 40 minutes away in Thunder Bay, for those canoes heading back west, it was more difficult. They had to lessen each canoe by 2 packs. They had to travel some extra miles. They had to carry the canoes quite more. It was a slower route.
By 1840, all fur trading here had ceased. In fact, the once important buildings in the Northwest Company were lost to time until their rediscovery in the 1900s and their eventual preservation as a national monument. Traveling the countryside, in Grand Portage, Minnesota, I'm Andrew McCray.